Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tech Loft podcast. I'm your host, Sal, and in this episode, we've got three curated articles I decided to share with the listeners of the Tech Loft podcast. So what we're going to be talking about today, three posts I found, unfortunately, it's going to be a little bit of PlayStation and a little bit of Google, evil Google. So we're going to talk about a little bit of fun, how to get your platinum trophies for the PlayStation gamers, console owners. The next one is, again, another PlayStation article regarding the CMOS battery, the system clock battery, and its effects when it dies in the console. And the final one is Flock, Google and their Flock, Federated Learning of Cohorts. It's to replace third-party cookies where it's supposed to collect data to present to you ads that are specific to you, influence you also, and all that. So all this is coming up on this episode of the Tech Loft podcast. And before we continue on, I just want to remind everyone that this, wherever you're listening this to, if you are listening this on a major podcast platform, please subscribe to the podcast. Also, if you can, give us a rating. If you like it, give us a very generous rating. If not, well, and I guess, you know, we're here all for the truth. So that's it. That's this episode. It's all coming up. Stay tuned, and let's begin. Okay, everyone, let's get into our first article here. So a little bit of fun. The first one I chose to share with you is how to reach trophy rank 999 faster on a PS4 and PS5. So if you want to increase your PlayStation trophy ranking and improve your gaming prowess, then you need to collect platinum trophies. Platinum trophies are a badge of honor for many players, signifying you completed every challenge a game has to offer. They also boost your PlayStation Network's trophy rank higher than mere bronze, silver, and gold trophies. And following Sony's overhaul of the trophy system last year, they're more valuable than ever, but just as difficult to obtain. So how can you earn platinum trophies easily? Players can easily collect bronze and silver tier trophies just by playing through a game in a straightforward manner. Gold trophies require extra effort, from mastering multiplayer modes to conquering bonus challenges to completing all side game content in a game, sometimes multiple times in a row. But platinum trophies, however, are only rewarded after you've unlocked every other trophy in the game. Considering many modern games feature massive content-packed worlds that can be explored for dozens or hundreds of hours, earning a platinum trophy takes much more effort than simply beating the single-player campaign. So, what are the easiest platinum trophies to earn on PS4 and PS5? As many trophy-hungry players have found, there are tons of games that can be platinumed in 10 to 15 hours, and just as many take much less time than that. It's possible to grab a bunch of small games off the PlayStation Network and earn 5 or 6 new platinum trophies in as many hours. The catch is some of these games are, how we say, questionable in quality. Still, if you possess a competitive drive to reach trophy rank 999, no matter the cost, there are plenty of low-effort platinums to take advantage of. So Cultured Vulture created a list of the 50 easiest PlayStation 4 platinum trophies, and that that's a place to start for finding a list of games that can be platinumed in less than 10 hours, or some as low as 60 minutes or less. Even the few that crack the 10-hour mark should be easy playthroughs. Now, just to name a few, We have Grim Fandango, Goat Simulator, Life is Strange, most of the Telltale narrative games, Day of the Tentacle Remastered, Chickens on the Road. Now, that's just a few. Because now, like I said, you can I can put this link in the show description. Culture Vultures, 50 of the easiest PlayStation 4 Platinum games. Okay, to achieve Platinum trophies. If you're looking for PlayStation 5 exclusive, Platgit's roundup of best PlayStation 5 launch titles to Platinum can help. Platgit also reviews new games based on their trophies, so it's worth bookmarking the site to see what will take to Platinum the latest releases. All right, and finally, the PlayStation 4 subreddit Trophy Hunting Society thread is a great place to find suggestions and to chat with fellow trophy friends. So that's pretty handy. I know years ago, I went on a little bit of a PlayStation grind just to up my my trophy status. And then since then, I've never really made an increase since then. That was quite a few years ago. So I'm glad to see that we have a list of games that you can easily get these platinum trophies. Should be interesting to look at, and look for the links to the mentioned websites in the description of this podcast. I will be sure to include it there. All right, so here's our second article regarding the PlayStation 4 in today's episode. Sorry to again focus on PlayStation in this episode, but this one's a pretty big deal. So the article, and a lot of people have been talking about it on YouTube, and there's been posts about it from various tech sites and gaming sites, entertainment sites, is that the PlayStation 4's fatal system clock battery error reportedly proven by a player. So what's people are saying is that if the CMOS battery, exactly just like the CMOS battery in a computer, that it's got a little battery and maintains the time and date while your computer is unplugged. So the PlayStation 4 has a CMOS battery, and if it dies, you will no longer be able to play online games or even disc-based games. So let's check out this article. So PlayStation 4 owners on Twitter have discovered the possibility that console's CMOS battery may render the console unstable when the battery dies. A number of PlayStation 4 owners have seemingly proven through various experiments that the console cannot play games once the internal CMOS battery dies. Sony's fourth generation PlayStation console launched back in 2013, running in stiff competition with the Xbox One and Nintendo Wii U for nearly 7 years. Hold on a second. Stiff competition with the Nintendo Wii U. As I recall, wasn't that one a flop? The Wii was good. The Wii U flopped. But anyways, they've made up for it with the with their latest console there. Anyways, let's keep going. So in 2020, the PlayStation 4 was succeeded by the PlayStation 5, Sony's newest current-gen console. As new consoles come out, it's only natural that older consoles are discontinued and developers stop supporting them. Sony recently announced that the PlayStation 3, PSP, and PS Vita digital stores will soon be closed, with players no longer able to make online purchases on these older consoles. These closures are scheduled to happen very soon, with the PlayStation 3 and PSP stores closing in July and the PS Vita store closing in August. Now, I've discussed this a couple podcast episodes back, so we knew about this a couple months ago. That at first it was a rumor, but it indeed has been confirmed. Players who continue to use these consoles are encouraged to make any desired purchases and downloads while they can, because they will not be able to once the stores have been closed. Now, I thought I heard that, yes, you cannot make purchases, but your downloads, you'll always be able to get to the downloads. That's what I thought I read. And I hope that is still indeed true. Twitter user Does It Play One A team of gamers dedicated to testing games for the sake of media preservation recently unveiled that the PlayStation 4's CMOS battery may be intrinsically linked to the console's function. Once this battery dies, the console could be unavailable to play games, online or offline, making it unusable. Fellow Twitter user Forrest_Reviews seemingly confirmed this theory, having removed the PlayStation 4 Slim's CMOS battery to test the results. After the battery's removal, the console was unable to play any games, physical or digital, due to the lack of internet connection. So what's this? The CMOS battery is linked to the internet connection? Does It Play One? We have a tweeter. I'm going to read the tweet from Does It Play One. What happens in the future when CMOS battery in your console dies and the servers are unreachable? We fear it could have serious implications for software preservation. We need to gather data to confirm our theory, and you can help. Let's keep going. The quirk of the PlayStation 4 CMOS battery may spell disaster for the console's future, and a different glitch in the console has recently made headlines as well. Hackers recently discovered a bug that allowed PlayStation 4 users to game share with unlimited number of additional consoles. The game share feature allows one PlayStation 4 user to allow another user access to their digital games library, effectively sharing the games across consoles. While the feature is meant for use in a single household, hackers have managed to share a collection of games across a large number of consoles. Meanwhile, the console's successor, the PlayStation 5, has just received its first major software update. Preservation and accessibility has become a major topic in the gaming industry as digital distribution and game streaming has become more and more popular. Many gamers still purchase physical copies of games because it ensures they cannot lose access to their favorite titles due to software or connection issues. And this is 100% true. My number one preference is a physical game copy, disc. Must. The only time that I purchase a digital copy of a game, if it's less than $10, if it's less than $10, a clearance price, kind of hard to picture that, but like really, really dirt cheap, 80, 90% off the game. Yeah, sure. I'll get the digital copy because it's dirt cheap. However, if you got to spend like full or close to the full price of the game, definitely get that hard copy. You're going to need it because look at what's happening here. Digital backups are from the publishers. They're not going to be around forever. Unfortunately, this PlayStation 4 CMOS battery could render the entire console useless, whether gamers have physical discs or not. As more research is done by the likes of Does It Play One and Forrest Reviews, the possibility of PlayStation 4 becoming a simple paperweight will become more clear. Now, this is big news. This is like a high alert because if the CMOS battery dies and you can't play your games, then you're screwed. However, you can, from what I'm reading, and I'm pretty sure I didn't even have to read anything here, you can replace the CMOS battery. It's just that you have to open up your console and move a couple things out of the way and replace the battery. What would make it easier is if there was a firmware update on the console to eliminate this threat of the CMOS battery affecting game playability. That would be the best thing to do. And then if they wanted to get a little notification saying, "Hey, your CMOS battery is out. Please replace." That would be a big help. I would vote for that. But yeah. PlayStation 4 users like myself, check this out, CMOS battery. Hopefully this is something that Sony can fix in the very near future while the PlayStation 4 is still a supported hardware. Okay, guys, and for our final piece that I decided to share, bring to the show, it's actually, it has to do with Google and their blocking of third-party cookies to collect for advertising and all that. So if you didn't know, Google is changing the way it collects information from you for their ads. So Google has introduced something called FLOC, Flock, which is called Federated Learning of Cohorts. So what is Google's Flock and why is it bad for you? You might have come across consent notifications on websites you visit asking you to allow cookies from the website. When you allow the cookies, they act as data collection agents, which help advertisers place the ads that suit your needs or likings. And you see this in the browser on certain websites. You see this on your mobile browser, on your phone. When you open it, if you've ever opened it up, you get to control, switch on and off what you want the website to collect from you. Either everything, or you can select what to turn off or leave on. So to put it in other words, have you ever wondered how you are seeing ads of a particular product or category which you had searched for in Amazon or other online e-commerce stores? This is possible only with the tracking and the data that the third-party cookies on your browsers collect. Okay, so we all know that, no big secret. Cookies collect that data and they influence the ads that appear on the website that you're viewing. The data collected by third-party cookies help in creating a digital profile to target you with ads that suit your likes. Advertisers get the data they need through third-party cookies. There arises the question of where you think of privacy. Your privacy is compromised by those cookies. Your behavior is predicted by the algorithms, and your decisions get influenced by the ads they served. Okay? Again, this is true. I believe this. Google decided to put an end to third-party cookies and give more prominence to users' privacy. Wink, wink, right? So they are replacing the traditional third-party cookies with federated learning of cohorts, or FLOC, Flock. Now let's see what it is in detail and know how it affects your privacy. To put it directly, Flock helps the advertisers in serving targeted ads based on their web behavior without third-party cookies. It is a browser standard that comes in Google Chrome, where it collects the data about the user's web browsing habits, preferences, activity, and the data is grouped with that of others with similar preferences and habits. The groups are called cohorts in technical terminology. A cohort consists of data of people with similar browsing habits. Each user in the group is assigned a cohort ID, which is shared with the advertisers to serve ads. Whatever you do on the web, it is summarized into a cohort ID. The cohort ID is then displayed to everyone you interact with on the web. The data an advertiser gets with Flock is more detailed and large as compared to the data collected by third-party cookies. Google Chrome uses an algorithm called SymHash, which groups you into a cohort based on the websites you visit. It calculates a cohort or Flock ID every week based on your web activity in the past 7 days. Now, this is why every time I'm done surfing the web, I close my browser and I delete cookies every time I close the browser. So that's always cleaned out every time. Also, instead of using my tabs for surfing the web or more rather logging into the services, I actually use separate browsers to sign in. Crossover of data being collected from that single browser on every single thing that you do. So now, why is Google's Flock bad for you? So third-party cookies are given access only a certain data of a user. But with Flock, it is not the case. Here's why Google's Flock is bad for you. So the first point is predictability. Google wants to end the tracking done by third-party cookies, but the replacement they proposed tracks more and collects a lot more information that usually is not collected by third-party cookies. A bad is being placed with something evil. A bad is being replaced with something evil if we put it in general terms. When you are using Google Chrome with Flock enabled, the data enabled is put into a cohort and you are assigned a cohort ID. Large organizations such as Google can predict everything about you with the cohort ID that contains almost everything you do on the web. Your interests, demographics, past behavior, etc. can be predicted. And as a side note, what do they do with that little folder of goodies? Do they sell it off to other advertisers? The next point is browser fingerprinting. So this is another big deal. This is why you gotta start watching what browsers you use. Case in point, Google. Stop using it because it fingerprints your browser so it can identify you easier on your habits. So moving on with browser fingerprinting, the most important issue that every security researcher is pointing a finger at is browser fingerprinting. It is a practice of collecting small and discrete pieces of information from the user's browsing activity to create a unique and identifiable profile for the browser. No browser has been successful in stopping fingerprinting. Tor and some other browsers had to forego some features to stop fingerprinting, to the large extent. Flock gives the advertisers and organizations whatever they want and powers the browser fingerprinting to the next level. Next, exposure through services. There are many companies that offer their services and ask you to log in using Google to use them. There is a huge risk that the organizations can tie the information they collect through your Google profile to your Flock ID. Reverse engineering can reveal your cohort ID and the information on the ID and the information collected through the account merge together to give a detailed digital fingerprint. Currently, Google is testing the Flock standard as a trial on Chrome users from Australia, Brazil, Canada, India, Indonesia, Japan, Mexico, New Zealand, the Philippines, and the United States. The trial consists of 0.5% of users. The trial consists of a 0.5% of users from the selected locations. Stop using Google Chrome. You can fight this, and I was gonna say that there are other browsers that can prevent this. So DuckDuckGo, Google, Brave, and Vivaldi browsers have decided to start blocking Google Flock. Okay, so those right there, DuckDuckGo. They are privacy search, and they do have a privacy browser for mobile. Brave PC and desktop and mobile. I have not used Vivaldi browser, but Brave is definitely the main browser that I use to surf the internet. Now, another thing I was going to say about Google sign-ins: when I use different services and they all ask for a Google sign-in, I go for the service's own sign-in and not using the unified Google one. It makes it easier. But they can merge that data, just like the article said, that data can be merged because then they know who you are and all your habits and likes and all that stuff. Now, if you want to find if you are added to the trial run, visit amiflocked, so that's amiflocked.org, amiflocked.org, and click on the Check for Flock ID button. So I'm going to try that after I take care of this little recording and see what I can find. So hopefully this little news article helps you in understanding what Google's Flock is all about. And hopefully if you go to amiflock.org, you can find out your Flock ID to see if you've been participating in that in this program. Now, I'm assuming that this will only work if you're using Google Chrome, since it's only in Chrome that they're using collecting this data, but who knows? But anyways, that's it. Google Google Chrome, Flock, and all that tracking you more harder than ever than third-party cookies. And that is all for this edition of the Tech Loft podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed this quick episode. If you have any questions or comments, concerns, I am available on Twitter. Our handle here is at the Tech Loft, and you can tweet us a message or anything like that. If you have any news that you'd like us to share on the podcast, please send it through Twitter. That's one way to communicate through us. But if you're an Anchor user, there's also a messages feature. If you're using the Anchor app, you can send us a message through there, and we'll pick it up on our end. Once again, I want to remind everyone to please like this episode if you enjoyed it. And if you want to hear more the Tech Loft podcast, please feel free to subscribe. You can subscribe on, we're available on all the major podcast platforms from Google to Apple to Anchor, Spotify. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Using the Anchor to manage and create podcasts is a fantastic tool as well. It's free. It's free. Yes. That is all for this week. Thank you for listening, and ciao for now.